Have you ever stopped to wonder why it's so easy to create our ideal RPG characters, but so difficult to create our ideal selves? If you want to become just as confident and empowered in real life as your D&D character is at the table, join me for my brand new Identi-D&D Life Coaching Workshop. I use the character building framework from D&D for a casual but really effective way to identify what's holding you back from being the best version of yourself. Listen in at the end of the episode to learn more.
Welcome to The Compendium, a resource designed to help you spend less time learning D&D and more time actually playing.
Welcome back to The Compendium as we dive into yet another race. This episode, we are going to break down all about halflings. So let's just start with, you know, let's talk a little bit about who they are, where they live, what they do, and get a feel for the community that are halflings.
So halflings are not hobbits, only because hobbit is a trademark term.
Right.
Now,
closest
I'm sure,
association.
Yeah, I am sure there is some interview or article somewhere where they're like, but as you read their entry in the player's handbook and see them depicted in different things, they're just hobbits. And so if you have read The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings or seen the movies, you already have a pretty good understanding of what these creatures are. And unlike some of the other things we've looked at, like dwarves and elves, where we're like, well, you know, a lot of cultures have different thoughts on what elves are. And some of them are small and make cookies and others make toys and others are amazing archers. Halflings are just halflings. Can't really think of a good example of halflings in other media other than D&D and kind of Lord of the Rings. They are very related to kind of the myriad of like fae creatures, like, you know, brownies and sprites and things from like English lore, or like leprechauns or something. They might be actually really close to leprechauns in some ways, but
except they don't really care about gold.
They don't, but they are
similar
very,
in other aspects.
Yeah. I mean, I think in their stature, I think in their luckiness and their like love of not trickery, but maybe like little pranks and being hard to find.
Shenanigans.
That's the right word. Yes. The love of shenanigans and things and being kind of far away from the rest of life. They are very similar to leprechauns in that way, but they're not, because they're not fae creatures. They're straight up mortal, unlike elves and some other things.
They don't have any innately magical properties,
right? Not really. For the most part, no. Like your standard halfling doesn't have any innate magic other than the fact that is that they're very lucky. Like they're just seen as being very lucky. And we'll get to that in a second.
That's kind of like thinking like a rabbit's foot though. Like, you know, some people think a rabbit is lucky. That, you know, it's up for debate. Is it not? But they don't, it's not like a tiefling or some of these other races that just by existence, they have this weird little spark of magic that exists inside of them. And so when you're referring to them as like sort of similar to fae creatures, we're not implying that there is some sort of innate magic that just lives inside of them, but people might regard them like almost with a superstition, maybe.
Yeah, more superstition than like out and out magic in D&D worlds. And so, as far as like their culture and like their personalities, they're very much like the English, right? Very practical. They like to stay home, family and friends. Warm, cozy living spaces, and they can kind of just, you know, integrate anywhere, but oftentimes they're kind of tucked away in a corner and kind of do their own thing. That's kind of their whole thing, is they're everyone's like best friend, basically. They don't like to make a lot of ruckus. They just want to live in peace and, you know, enjoy a good meal and a warm fire and a conversation after dinner. You know, that's their whole thing.
Yeah, it's kind of that concept of community or fellowship. Mm-hmm. Like that is their fundamental, like core thing that they're going for in life, is contentment within the social relations of kind of their network, I guess, especially family network, from my understanding.
Yeah, very much. And I could easily see like in a D&D party that the halfling character is the one who's always checking on people to make sure they're okay, and maybe even trying to calm some arguments between other players' characters, and they just want this big family that they've found to kind of keep working well and everyone to get along. And so they're not going to be the instigators for sure. I think they might even be reluctant to take sides in certain things, just based on the lore, but they rather they want to be mediators in a family sense, right? Like there's an argument in your house, you know, mom is the one who steps in and says, hey, everyone just take 5 minutes, go to your rooms. We'll talk about this in a minute, probably over like, you know, a cup of tea and some cookies English. Or biscuits. Yeah, English, exactly.
English. Oh my gosh, I love it.
In my experience, there's nothing a cup of tea can fix. So that's very much them. And also with halflings too, oftentimes, like I described, they're going to be off in their own little like shires or little towns, kind of in the corners of empires, because they're not empire builders. They don't accumulate wealth just for wealth's sake, like a dwarf does. They love beauty and novelty, but not like an elf that's going to make this grand thing over hundreds of years. And while they are mundane, they don't, you know, create industry and great castles and things like humans do. They're very content people with curiosity built into them and novelty built into them. And it doesn't take a lot for them to be interested in something. Even seeing like, you know, a different way of dressing is like, oh, that's really cool. How did you make that? What's that fabric? How did you do this turn? Like they're going to be interested. And so while they do have a reputation of being like homebodies and just like wanting like family home and comfort, home and hearth, it's not a stretch to see why they might be adventuring, because they like this idea of just finding new and interesting things and having a bit of a wanderlust, or just you know, getting the most out of life, I think is a good idea there as well.
Yeah, it reminds me, as you were describing, that kind of like a childlike curiosity or childlike sense of wonder, in that, you know, children know where their home is. They know their home is safe. It's where, mm-hmm. you know, they're okay and the world is all good. But then they're always interested in everything and they want to try everything. And they're curious about, well, what is this new thing? A little bit like Jack Skellington when he's in Christmas Land.
What's this?
Like, oh, this is all so exciting. And that's kind of what that reminded me of a little bit.
Yeah. And there's an argument that's been made on the internet multiple places that there is a old school race in D&D called the Kinder, which are very much even more what we're talking about here, where they're like very small, they're slight, and they have like a childlike wonder all the time to the extreme. It very is Jack Skellington. What's this? What's this? But the hobbits are a bit more subdued than that, because it's not so much like, I just got to go out and experience the world, Ma. It's more like, oh, well, I heard this really funny joke when I was traveling in this other town, or, oh, this is how they're doing it in Luskin, where they wear their hats like this. And like, they're just interested in people, because people allow you to form relationships. And I think relationship really is the driving force for a lot of halflings. So whether that is to defend, they might go adventuring to defend their homes, they might go adventuring to help out an ally or a friend, or just to, you know, see the wider world and what their place in it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that makes sense too, with how the player's handbook breaks down their sense of, I don't want to say law, but kind of like that social economic organization. Like there really is no nobility, there's no royalty. Those concepts, those constructs don't exist, because they look towards the elders within, you know, their communities for advice or for, you know, leadership. And so it's kind of coming back to what you were saying about how, you know, it's all about community, it's all about relationships, even in the hierarchy of how they live their lives and kind of see right and wrong or good and evil, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's a very simple social structure for sure. And it really does tie into this idea of of their one large community, and they know all the different families and things, but an elder from a different family may have, you know, a good wisdom for you or make a good decision for the whole of the group, and you're okay with that. Whereas like dwarves, they have their houses, right? Their clans. And so a suggestion by one rival clan may not be okay with some other clans. And so there's still deliberation until the nobles or king or whatever makes the final call. And there's more bickering and political intrigue. With the halflings, you don't really see that often. They're more, like you said, the fundamental driving force for them seems to be relationship.
Yeah, I think that's important too, because it actually struck me, you know, I thought of them being homebodies, and they're not, they're community bodies, because mm-hmm. it even says in here, like, they might not even have a physical home. They might be kind of nomads where they live yeah. on a wagon or something like that, traveling from place to place. And that sounded like, when I read that, it clashed with my concept or my stereotype idea of what the halflings are. But with more understanding, it makes sense, because it's all about the people that you're with, and those people can travel with you in your yeah. covered wagon or in your boat or whatever it might be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there might be like just roving caravans or like Bedouin halflings. And in fact, in the world of Eberron on Corvair, they live in a giant desert. They ride dinosaurs, and they're desert nomads, which is awesome. But it, even though that's radically different than like the Shire, it's still consistent because of that that kind of undertow of relationship, and home is where you make it, and family is who you make it. So I really like that. They're just so wholesome. I just really like halflings. There's two other kind of notable features about, just in lore, I think, when it comes to halflings. And one is that they have endured over the centuries, not by force of might, not by ingenuity, not by by hiding under the mountains deep, but by basically just staying out of the way, where they will just, they live in among other communities. Like, so in a human kingdom, there might be a giant population of halflings, because humans are okay. And their empires, while we have no interest in them, they keep us safe, or they're going to live off the beaten path and kind of treat the best security is obscurity, is kind of their idea. And that links into this other idea that they are lucky. And there's all these stories and little hooks and things over the years of D&D of where they'll survive like an invading horde of orcs and ogres and giants and things, and they just miss them, right? They just like, they march down the main road, and they don't take the little fork off to the side that leads around the other side of a lake and past the woods, and that's where the halflings live, because they just didn't go that way. And so they're very lucky, and they always end up being kind of just in the right place at the right time. And that's because, and this is like super deep lore, this isn't even in the player's handbook, which is crazy, is that they have an association with a variety of usually female luck-based deities. In the old days, it was Avandra, and she was one of the main core deities in 4th edition, and then she's not in 5th edition. Her closest kind of corresponding deity is Timora, who is a luck goddess. But in the old days, Avandra...
Back in my day!
After everyone else had created their races, Avandra and others either... it's hazy, either adopted or created the halflings and blessed them, not with might, not with skill, not with magic, but with luck. And so while there's never going to be like big temples or shrines to any of these deities, earlier today that they'll often kind of like, if they just like, you know, dodge out of the way of a falling piece of rubble from a, you know, the roof of a house or something, and it misses them, they'll say a quick prayer to Avandra or Timora. And so she's kind of like watching over them in this really indirect kind of vague way. That's kind of her blessing to them. And so they kind of like have a head nod to that deity, whoever she may be in whatever version you're playing. But they're not overly religious, because they are pretty self-reliant, and they will not reach out to a god, they'll reach out to each other, because again, it's about relationships and the allies that you form.
Right. I mean, it's that concept where a lot of people, when they experience like a near death like moment, where they'll make the symbol of the cross, whether or not they're religious or not. I think it's kind of that idea of like, if there is something out there, I want to make sure that I say thank you, because that was close.
Yeah. They'll say, oh, thank God. And they're like, do you go to church? They're like, no. You're like, okay, never mind. Doesn't worry about it. Yeah. Like, yeah. Every atheist believes in God in the foxhole, right? That's the old saying. So very much this way as well.
Well,
so.
I like that. I actually really love that imagery, because I think it makes for a wonderful lead in as to why oh my gosh, I'm doing it too.
Yeah. It's hard,
halflings,
isn't it?
Why halflings go on. Yeah. Please don't sue us. Would go on adventures. If they feel like there's potentially this divine being just kind of watching out for them, adventuring seems just a little bit less scary.
Yes, like, aren't you worried? That'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Because it typically is for halflings. It'll be fine.
Thank you guys so much for equipping the compendium today. If you're interested in diving into a different type of character development, consider checking out my brand new life coaching experience, the Identity D&D Workshop. I handcrafted this experience using the framework of building a D&D character with some of the tools that I know as a life coach to help people do an investigation check on themselves and who they really want to show up as in life. As a special thank you, Compendium listeners can get $25 off this 5-hour workshop by using the code COMPENDIUM, that's COMPENDM, at registration. Just visit www.envisagelifecoach.com and click on workshops to learn more or register. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already done so, since episodes are published every Tuesday and Friday, or Monday and Thursdays if you're a patron on our Patreon account. If you enjoy listening each week, a great way to help support the show outside of contributing to our Patreon is just by sharing a link to this episode with one of your friends that you think might like it too. We hope to see you back in a few days for the next episode, where we're going to be continuing our discussion, delving further into the world of D&D.